reports that say there's that something hasn't happened are always interesting to me.
Ladies and gentlemen, please take your seats. Please, no flash photography throughout our program.
The known unknowns. That is to say, we know there's some things we do not know.
Live from No One Really Knows Where.
Ooh, hello everybody. It's the Known Unknowns. We're a podcast about all things strange, Fortean, unknown, unsolved, and just plain weird. My name is Peter. I'm joined by Steven.
Hello.
And he's about to tell me about something that I've never heard of before, and it sounds like maybe you haven't either.
Oh, Peter, no one knows the answers to any of the questions that we're going to put forward today, Peter.
Excellent.
But my question for you, though, is why do people like missing person cases?
Why do people like missing persons cases?
Yep.
Well, I think the easy answer would be because of... No, I don't know. I have no idea. I had something smart to say, and then it didn't make any sense, and so I got nothing.
It's probably a group of factors, Peter.
Yeah.
It's not probably any one thing. It could be the fact that it's a mystery, and there's no closure to any of these. Mm-hmm. And so that, you know, piques our curiosity, our problem-solving instincts.
Yeah, you can come up with your own theories, your own solutions.
There's also the emotional connection with some of these people that we're going to be talking about.
Sure. Like if it's a kid that's gone missing, you get to go.
We're not going to be talking about any kids today. But these stories, Peter, these missing people stories often mirror some of our deeper fears and our own anxieties for if someone famous can go missing, it can happen to literally anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a puzzle, you know, putting the pieces together, Peter, being your own detective.
Yeah.
Trying to theorize about what happened. Peter, so that's going to be our topic today. Missing people.
Ooh.
And we're gonna generally try to stick with group disappearances today.
Sure.
With a few exceptions. Because, Peter, I don't know if you know this, but so many people have gone missing through time that you could probably make a whole episode just about a whole podcast about missing people.
Yeah.
I'm sure that also exists.
Probably. I wouldn't be surprised.
But yeah, we're not going to talk about any of the famous single cases here. We're not going to be talking about, you know, your Earharts or your Jimmy Hoffas, your Rockefellers, your Amy Lynn Bradleys. We'll save all
I've
those.
I've never heard of any of them.
You've never heard of what? Amelia Earhart?
Oh, okay. No, I have heard of her.
Okay. With Jimmy Hoffa?
No.
With John D. Rockefeller Jr.?
I know of the Rockefellers.
But those are all for the future episodes, Peter.
Perfect.
We're going to do group disappearances. So we're going to start off with a tale that we've actually already mentioned in our podcast before, Peter.
Ooh, a little throwback.
A little throwback. The Lost Army of Cambyses. Peter, do you remember who Cambyses was?
Is this the one where they were in the mountains and then they went into a time slip and they went back in time and met a bunch of Nazis?
No, Peter. We're going to be doing a time slip episode before too long. So I'm glad you remembered that, Peter.
Aha! At least I remembered something.
Cambyses was the son of the legendary Cyrus the Great of Persia.
Ah.
And was, if you believe the official story, Peter, replaced by a wizard who was killed by the guy who would become the next king of Persia.
Excellent.
So, or he just got murdered by someone else and then that person became the king.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Who history's knows? Full of nonsense. But this tale, Peter, is steeped in both known history and unknown mystery.
That's a nice little rhyme scheme you had going there.
Peter, according to legend, this Persian army consisted of 50,000 soldiers. And that's when they say soldiers, Peter, that's just the actual fighting people.
Right. None of the support people.
you know, tons of camp followers, people that get water, servants, all of that. So God knows how many this actually was. All these people, though, Peter, they vanished in Egypt's western desert in 524 BC during a massive sandstorm.
Just gone.
Just gone. Yeah, they were on a mission ordered by Cambyses to capture the Siwa Oasis.
Okay.
As part of the first Achaemenid Persian conquest of Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
Although, Peter, the story might be apocryphal and is considered, you know, legendary by Egyptians, the story has inspired many people to search for Cambyses' armies.
Okay.
Because that's a big, that would be a big find.
Oh, yeah. You know. Go digging up in the desert.
Indeed. Notable searchers include Count Lazio Alamsi, or who you might know, Peter, as the inspiration for The English Patient.
Nope. If
that rings any bell. No, that's fine, Peter. Moving on.
that's a movie, right?
It is a novel and a movie.
Yep. Okay, yep.
And modern geologist Tom Brown. In 1933, Ord Windgate conducted an unsuccessful search in what was then known as the Libyan Desert.
Okay.
And so they weren't able
to find anything.
Yep.
Probably sand.
Lots of sand.
I bet a few rocks.
I bet it gets everywhere, and I bet he hated it.
Yeah. Probably rough.
The 1980s saw more attempts to find the lost army, Peter. One was done by Gary S. Chavez, who was an American journalist. He was sponsored by several prestigious universities and ran a six-month expedition that used advanced technology like ground-penetrating radar, but didn't find much, Peter.
Yeah, probably more sand.
Except a strange Persian-style sphinx in the uninhabited Sitar Oasis.
Okay.
That means that the Persians were there.
At some point.
That couldn't be linked to the lost army.
Right. It literally means nothing in relation to that.
It could mean nothing. Yep. But Peter, in the 21st century, further clues keep being found. In the year 2000, a Helwan University geological team found artifacts from a Persian army near the Siwa Oasis.
Ooh.
So that could be something.
It could be something.
In 2009, Italian archaeologists Angelo and Alfredo Castellagioni, pronounced perfectly.
Oh, yeah. Alfredo is probably my favorite first name ever.
Is it because you get hungry when you hear it?
I do. I do.
Oh, yeah, Peter. They found human remains.
Ooh.
Yep.
Exciting.
Tools and weapons dating back from the Persian era.
Hmm.
But of course, Peter, these two people, Alfredo and Angelo,
mm-hmm.
instead of, you know, publishing their works in reputable magazines and stuff, Peter,
right?
In scientific papers,
mm-hmm.
they decided just to film a documentary.
Gotta make that money.
So it's a controversial group.
Whether it was real or not, yeah.
Yep. Well, that's the lost army of Cambyses, Peter. What do you think of that?
I think that they're gone.
Do you think like 70,000 people could just walk into the desert and never be heard from again?
Yeah. I think 2,000 years ago, it probably actually happened a lot.
Well, actually, they thought that the real story behind this, Peter, might be that there was a rebel pharaoh who didn't want to, you know, surrender to the Persians.
Mm-hmm.
So he fought a battle that was humiliating to the Persians. And so instead of saying that battle happened, the entire army was just lost to a storm.
Yeah. I mean, so I don't know how that's less embarrassing, but, you know.
Yeah, I don't. I'm not a.
I guess you can put it down to an act of the gods then.
Exactly. Although that'd probably be even worse then, you know.
True. If the gods are against you, then, you know, maybe that's why he got killed by a wizard.
Yep, indeed. Well, Peter, we're going to go on to another thing that we've already talked about.
Excellent.
In the podcast. We can't possibly go into the full story of the founding of Rome, but we have hinted at its quote-unquote true beginnings in our Trojan History episode.
Yes, we have.
In a far too short and barely accurate summation, Peter, Romulus and his brother Remus were descended from Aeneas, who founded, not Aeneas, Romulus and Remus. They founded the city of Rome with a group of half-outlaws and half-thugs, and then tricked all of the cities around them, allowing them to steal their women so they could have wives.
Yep.
And eventually they founded the Roman Republic, and Romulus became the first leader of the Roman Republic.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my concise, totally accurate, you know, don't worry about anything.
Yeah, 100% listeners. Factual.
So Romulus's reign, if it happened, lasted 37 years and came to a mysterious and abrupt end when he was reported to have vanished in a whirlwind during a violent storm while inspecting his army. Yeah.
Maybe he got by a wizard, too.
He got by a wizard.
Everybody's getting got by wizards out here.
Peter, the ancient Roman historian Livy, presents multiple theories about what happened.
Mm-hmm.
The main and accepted one is that Romulus was raised to the heavens by the gods and became a god himself.
Right. You're obviously talking about accepted 1,500 years ago, yep. Not accepted
by the
currently.
Culture. Yep. Livy himself seems to favor this explanation because it aligns with the Romans' belief in their divine, you know, favor and
right,
founding.
Divine leadership.
A more possibly grounded theory is that he was murdered by a bunch of senators who thought he was ruling for too long.
Rome has this whole thing about Rome.
Yeah, about dictators.
They do, yeah.
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 They say his body was torn asunder and secretly disposed of. But we'll never know.
Yeah.
But Peter...
I like Romulus, the idea of the gods just being like, ah, you're up here now.
Yep, you are a god.
Yoink.
And speaking on that, Peter, Romulus's mythical status is enhanced by the cult that developed around him after his disappearances. Because this is one of the big things in Roman history.
They're also big into cults, yeah.
He was deified and worshipped by a different name as Quirinus, a name that possibly originates from He of the Quorum.
I didn't know that was him, too.
Yep. Again, I'm assuming that this is correct. I'm not a Romanologist.
I've heard of it before. I didn't know any details, but...
Yeah. It could be from Corvium, which means assembly of man.
Mm-hmm.
So... which reflects his role in the founding of Rome. And, you know, the tendency to mythologize their history, Peter, is a big thing in Roman history.
Oh, yeah.
Which fits him becoming a god perfectly.
Literally every aspect of Rome.
Yep. It's all divinely ordained.
All mythicized and almost none of it's probably true.
Well, we have something that may or may not be true. Another Roman story, Peter.
Ooh, okay.
This one even you might have heard. This is kind of a famous one, Peter.
Mm.
Have you ever heard of the Ninth Legion?
The Ninth Legion? Didn't they go missing in Europe or in England?
They did maybe
Britannia.
Go missing. Maybe. Yep, we're going to get to that right here, Peter. Because the mystery of the Ninth Legion, their official name was Legio Ninth Hispania, is one of the most intriguing puzzles of all of Roman military history.
Mm-hmm.
Because, believe it or not, Peter, they just fucking disappeared.
Just gone.
The Roman legions were renowned for their discipline, bravery, loyalty.
Mm-hmm.
This legion particularly was founded in the 1st century BC and served directly under Julius Caesar and Augustus Caesar.
Ooh.
So literally,
big names
in Roman history, the politicians had armies. They were the generals. You got an army to earn honor, and then you got that got you money, which you used to buy a bigger army, which got you more honor.
Well, and this was specifically in like the Caesars did this.
Yes. Yep. There was even a Roman, a very famous Roman named Crescius, who would say that you couldn't be considered rich if you couldn't afford an army.
Oh.
Yeah. Peter, so the 9th Legion was, as you mentioned, stationed in Brittany and played a crucial role in constructing Hadrian's Wall and in quelling resistance from the Celts. But by the 3rd century AD, Peter, it just vanished. Without a trace, giving rise to many theories about what happened to them.
Yes, yes, yep. Many theories.
So you've heard about this, Peter. What have you heard about what happened to these guys?
I mean, the most grounded in reality theory that I've heard is they probably just got sick of being in Brittany for 200 years without like any direct contact with Rome anymore. And so they just kind of all deserted and assimilated to life in Brittany.
That could be one theory, Peter, here. But one of the most popular theories is that the 9th Legion met its end in battle against the Picts in what is now Scotland. This theory suggests that the Legion was ambushed and almost completely wiped out, with soldiers being killed or captured. But Peter, there's a big problem with this.
The Picts would have a hard time doing that.
Well, they've beaten Roman legions before.
But not that badly.
Yeah, the big problem is, Peter, that there's no clear evidence of such a battle.
Right.
Of ever happening. And as you mentioned, Peter, it would be entirely... It'd be kind of hard for an entire legion to be wiped out by these people.
Yeah. In all of ancient history, that doesn't happen. Like, there's no such thing. Almost no such thing. Being entirely wiped out.
Right. There is a famous bit about the 2 Roman legions being destroyed in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Varus, give me back my legions. Where, you know, that's Germanus is from, Peter.
Right.
Which you are very familiar with being from where you're from.
Yes.
Germanus might also be known as Herman the German.
Herman the German, the man who plunged us into the Dark Ages. Bless up.
Well, Peter.
But even that battle, right? Yep. We have evidence of it.
Yeah,
there were survivors who talked about it. Like, it would be so out of the ordinary to have no survivors.
Bragged about it, too. They would have bragged about it.
Yeah, there would be something.
There'd be a site. There'd be a site that you could go to and still see the signs of the battle.
Mm-hmm.
Assuming it wasn't paved over, you know, for a highway.
True.
Another theory, Peter, is that the Legion was actually moved from Britain to assist in the Second Jewish Revolt in 132 AD. You know, this does match the timeline of when it went missing, Peter. And there are signs of other Legions coming to help in this revolt.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no concrete evidence that the 9th Legion ever participated in the Jewish revolt.
And Romans were meticulous about
record keeping. Yep.
And also, if you think about it, going from Brittany
all the
to
way
Palestine on foot as an army takes a year, 2 years probably. Like, it takes a long time.
March there, yeah.
Again, like, how much help would that particular legion actually be, being at the very, very furthest region away?
This is off the top of my head, Peter, but if I remember correctly, like, at the height of Rome's power, the total fighting force that they could entirely wield with something like 900,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's how accurate that is. But that's, if I remember reading that fact somewhere, it's just an interesting fact.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot of people.
Yeah. Peter, a third theory speculates that the Ninth Legion was annihilated during the Parthian War in the 160s AD. Because Roman historian Cassius Dio mentions an unnamed legion being destroyed in the conflict.
Okay.
Which some believe could be the Ninth.
Could be the Ninth.
Again, there's no record of the Ninth being deployed over here, Peter.
Right.
Parthia is the very eastern part of the Middle East and Persia, all that type of area.
Yeah.
There is another part of... you mentioned, Peter, already that another theory, they could have just been moved or to another part of the Roman Empire and or maybe disbanded.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't know. In the last couple of years, Peter, a new theory has emerged, though.
Ooh, new theories are always fun.
This
and usually not ridiculous at all.
In the 20th century, so not too long ago, but in the modern day.
Mm-hmm.
So, in the 20th century, a theory emerged suggesting that the inhabitants of Lishan, a county in the Western Han Dynasty of China, might have actual ancient Roman ancestry, Peter.
Mm.
This idea was proposed in the 1940s by Homer H. Dubs, a professor
fake
of
China.
It does sound like a fake name, right?
Homer Dubs.
Peter, he was a professor of China's history at Oxford.
Okay. Okay. So, allegedly. If he
the
was
Dubes
real.
Hypothesized that Dubes. Roman soldiers captured at the Battle of Carrhae were later settled by the victorious Parthians along their eastern frontier. So the Parthia, they're between Rome and China.
Mm-hmm.
So he later conjectured that these Romans might have served as mercenaries in a battle of Shishi in 36, in the year 36, Peter.
Okay.
Which was a conflict between the Chinese and the Xiongnu. So Chinese historical records, Peter, mention something unique about these people from here. They fought in what was called, unlike the rest of the Chinese soldiers, Peter, they fought in a fish scale formation.
Oh.
Which could be interpreted as the Roman testudo formation.
Right.
Or, you know, the turtle shields.
Yeah.
The Romans were very famous for.
The phalanx of Greek.
Yep. So it could be that they got captured in battle and lived out the rest of eternity in China.
That would be interesting.
I mean,
that's a very long way, from where they were last known to be. But it's an interesting
maybe
theory.
Maybe genetic testing hasn't shown that it's true either. But, you know, who knows for sure?
That's just science.
It's just science.
Yeah.
You know, don't need that here.
It doesn't mean anything.
And I apologize if I mispronounced any of anything ever.
Yep. Us? No, we don't do that.
Yeah. Well, Peter, I think we're done talking about Roman disappearances for now.
Okay. For now.
For now.
They always come back.
What other mass disappearances should we talk about, Peter? Does anything come to your head, Peter?
I legitimately, outside of the Ninth Legion, don't think I've ever heard of a single mass disappearance.
Well, Peter.
Has there ever been like a mass kidnapping by aliens?
Well, yeah, Peter, what about the lost colony of Roanoke?
You
heard about this one?
I have heard about that one. I lied earlier. Yeah. Outside of the Ninth Legion and the lost colony of Roanoke, I've never heard of
Well, Peter, the lost colony is one of the most enduring mysteries of American history.
Mm-hmm.
Established by Sir Walter Raleigh in an attempt to found the first permanent English settlement in North America,
mm-hmm.
The Roanoke Colony was first founded in 1585.
That was a long
on Roanoke
time
Island
ago.
in Yep. In present day Dare County, North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
You ever been to North Carolina, Peter?
I've never been to the East Coast. I've been to several other places, but haven't made it out there yet.
Governor Ralph Lane led the initial settlement, which faced significant challenges, including, well, they ran out of supplies, Peter.
Yeah, that's a significant challenge.
And kind of went to war with all of the local Native American tribes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. So having no food and everyone hating them.
Yep.
Sir Francis Drake offered passage back to England.
Ooh.
In 1856.
Sir Francis Drake. So I dressed up as him for Halloween one year.
Did you?
I did.
Did you, Peter?
I did. In third grade, we had to dress up as a historical figure for Halloween in school. And so I dressed up as Sir Francis Drake because I wanted to be a pirate.
Was Sir Francis Drake a pirate?
He was a privateer. Yeah. But I wanted to dress up as a pirate and we weren't allowed to just be a pirate. We had to be a historical figure. And you also weren't allowed to be anybody who was like, it was school. Bad. So you couldn't be like a, you know, violent person.
Blackbeard. So. Peter, I'm really sure Sir Francis Drake is an incredibly violent person.
Yeah, but I told my teacher that he wasn't.
Well, Peter, they went back to England in 1586. And then in 1587, another expedition led by John White landed on the same island.
Mm.
And this attempt was intended to establish the city of Raleigh in Chesapeake Bay. It became
and that
known...
one stuck.
It did not, Peter. Because this colony became known as the Lost Colony.
Mm.
This is the one that got lost. When all of its inhabitants mysteriously disappeared. White had to go back to England for more supplies, but was delayed in his return due to this little thing called the English-Spanish War. You know,
Yeah, just a little
Spanish armada. Little Spanish armada trying to, you know, overthrow the English crown. And
Yeah.
But when he got back, Peter, in 1590, so 3 years later.
Jesus.
Yeah.
That was a little late.
He found everyone gone with no signs of where they went, but the cryptic word Croatoan carved into a piece of wood in the colony. But I just wonder, Peter, because this was apparently a sign of where they would go. The Croatoans were either like another group nearby.
Okay.
But Peter, the fate of the between 110 and 120 colonists, we have no clue what happened to them, Peter.
Just wandered off into the woods and starved to death, got eaten by bears.
Early speculation did suggest that they might have assimilated into the Native American community surrounding the area.
The Native American communities who famously hated them.
Yeah. Investigations by the actual surviving Jamestown colonists produced reports of massacres and stories of people with European features in Native American villages. So we're talking, you know, blue eyes, you know, facial, obviously European facial features.
Mm-hmm.
But there was no conclusive evidence ever produced.
Right.
That's going to be the general consensus of this whole episode.
I feel like a lot of they got assimilated is kind of like some of the like white supremacist stuff that was going on back then of we're Europeans. So if these people can live here, of course we can live here. So obviously they didn't starve to death. They just didn't want to be living in the village anymore.
Well, Croatoan, Peter, actually is the name of another island that's nearby.
Oh, okay.
That plays into another theory that the colonists relocated to Croatoan Island, which is now, in modern day, the Hatteras Island, as suggested by the engraving on the piece of wood.
Right. But did anybody go look?
Well, Peter, John Lawson's exploration in the early 18th century did find evidence of European influence among the Hatteras people, including claims of ancestry from white settlers and the discovery of English artifacts in the tribe.
Okay.
But Peter, believe it or not, tribes have been trading with the English for a long time.
Yeah. It's not.
And there were other colonists too.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no direct archaeological evidence that these were the Roanoke settlers.
Right.
They could have been any number
anybody
of others.
Else.
But it, on the other hand, Peter, it could have been the
it could be.
Roanoke settlers.
Who knows? But to be clear, nobody in like 1590 went to the island that was written on the stick to go see.
I guess he spent like 3 days on the colony and then went back to England.
Ah, fuck it.
So
they'll be all right.
Can you imagine just sailing all the way across the Atlantic
for months on end?
Going in there for 3 days and then going back.
Yes, but. I can, because I feel like you've been on this fucking ship for 6 months. You get back, you're bringing supplies to these people, and they're gone, and you're just like, fuck it, I'm done. I'm done. I'm going home.
Well, Peter, this is gonna be the opportunity, because we're talking about Roanoke here, to bring up something that I wanted to bring up for a while. Something called the Dare Stones.
Mm.
You ever heard of the Dare Stones?
I don't think so.
And this is not telling your kids not to do drugs.
Right.
That's a different type of dare.
Don't do drugs, kids.
But the Dare Stones have been a subject of polite disagreement since their discovery in the late 1930s.
I'm sure it's been nothing but polite.
Yeah, Peter, these stones were inscribed with messages supposedly written by the members of the Lost Roanoke Colony. And there were 48 of them found, mostly claiming to be messages from Eleanor Dare to her father, Governor John White.
Okay.
And they're all cataloged at the Brenau University in Gainesville, Georgia. The stones say that the colonists migrated from Roanoke to about where Atlanta, Georgia is now, Peter.
Okay.
The first stone was found by Louis E. Hammond. In 1937. And that immediately launched a search for other stones of the type, Peter. But unlike this first stone, Peter, subsequent stones were linked to a Georgia stonecutter named Bill Eberhardt, and are generally considered to be forgeries.
Right. But not all of them.
Yep. By 1941, Peter, all reputable scientists and scholars dismiss them as hoaxes, except for the Hammond Stone.
Except for the very first one.
Unproven, yep.
Okay.
Yeah. In later years, Peter, more studies have been able to be done on the Dare Stone, the first one. But results remain inconclusive. A 1983 study by Robert L. Stevenson and a 2016 examination by University of North Carolina gave no definitive determination of authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
Peter, but the 2016 examination revealed that its inscriptions were consistent with medieval graffiti found in English churches. Because that's apparently something that exists.
Sure.
So it's either it's either authentic or a highly sophisticated, a
very
hoax.
Good fake.
Yeah, but we'll never know about the Dare Stones, Peter, or Roanoke. I can't imagine what single thing we would be able to find.
I mean, yeah, I don't know about that. As far as the Dare Stones go, I feel like I'm going to preface this by saying I know absolutely nothing about what I'm about to say.
Yes, Peter.
But I feel like at some point they've got to be able to just have some sort of computer thing that can just like look at something and be like, yeah, that ink is X number of years old or whatever.
It's carved into stone.
Yeah, and that and it'll look at it and go, yeah, that carving was carved 800 years ago.
I don't know. And I don't know if about science did this prove that, Peter.
Yeah, see? Yep. you can't prove me wrong.
Well, what do you think of the Roanoke story, Peter?
I think it's... I mean, it's like most of these, it's probably a lot more boring than it is. But the fact that nobody knows for sure is what makes it interesting. Because then you can have all these crazy... these wild theories.
Out there, yep. I didn't even mention any of the alien stuff, Peter. But, you know...
There's always got to be some alien stuff. Aliens.
We're going to stay in America, Peter. North America.
Okay.
In November of 1930, a strange discovery was made at an Inuit village near Lake Enjikuni in Nunavut, Canada, which I'm sure I perfectly pronounced correctly.
That's all the way up there, eh?
Yeah, Peter. This has become one of Canada's most enduring mysteries. When Joe LaBelle, a fur trapper familiar with the area, found the settlement entirely deserted, despite signs of recent occupation, there was food on the tables, precious hunting supplies were there, like weapons and knives and everything that you would not just leave if you left.
Right. The things that you would take with you for sure.
Yep. In fact, Peter, there was a fire going in a fireplace beneath a pot with burned food.
So this was like they had just been there.
Yeah. But there was no trace of the about 30 people that lived in this village. Just gone.
Huh.
LaBelle noticed that personal belongings were undisturbed in each hut. But what added to the mystery, Peter... was that, again, like I mentioned, all the food was still there. They didn't take anything with them, Peter.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to have left, boom, at the drop of a hat. And
yeah, they're
just without
gone.
Taking time to gather anything. So this confused LaBelle.
Yeah, who, naturally.
Like, this is not normal.
It's a little weird.
So he went to the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, the Mounties.
Yes. And you said this was in the 30s, right?
Yeah, 1930.
Okay.
Because he contacted them from the nearest telegraph office.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Mounties dispatched a unit to investigate the settlement. And Peter, during their journey there, the Mounties met a man named Armand Laurent, who was a local trapper, who shared an interesting account, Peter. He claimed to have seen a strange flying object over the land several nights before, heading in the direction of Enjikuni Lake.
Oh, boy.
So we maybe actually have UFO disappearances here, Peter.
Maybe.
When the Mounties arrived, they confirmed LaBelle's what he saw.
Yeah.
The village was indeed completely abandoned. They found something else, Peter, that LaBelle didn't look into.
Uh-oh. They All found of the corpses?
They found that the graves in the graveyard of the settlement had been broken open with the bodies missing.
Oh.
Yeah.
Jesus.
And not just that, Peter. All of the headstones from the graves were found stacked into two piles beside the empty graves.
Were they, like, sorted in any way, or just they were in two piles?
I don't know, Peter.
So the naughty list and the nice list. Santa came to get them.
Yeah. Oh, Peter. This is, as you can tell, a very bizarre
That one's weird.
And, of course, it sparked wide speculation and numerous theories.
Mm-hmm.
Again, people immediately went to UFOs, Peter, because that's why not? You have a UFO
Got
spot
to.
In the, yep. Others say that there might be a mundane explanation, such as the community relocating due to an environmental factor. But, you know,
but again, why would they leave everything?
Yep. Peter, despite many investigations by the Canadian authorities, no conclusive evidence or explanation for the disappearance of the villagers or the disturbed graves was ever found.
Hmm.
Yeah. What do you think of this story, Peter?
I think it was UFOs.
If it even happened at all.
I'm buying this one.
There are some... What do we call them on our show, Peter? Poo-pooers?
Poo-pooers.
There are some poo-pooers who say that maybe there was never a village here in the first place.
Well...
And that this story, none of this story is real.
I heard that there was a village and everybody went missing. So...
Indeed.
Poo-poo on that.
So, of the story so far, Peter, this is the weirdest, right?
I would say so, yeah. Especially, like, I assume that... If the Mounties were involved, there's some sort of paper trail.
Legitimate stuff, yep.
Like, there has to be, like, a report of something, of at least them leaving. Right?
There's no real evidence that this happened, Peter, but besides people saying that it happened. But I choose to believe it did happen.
I'm going to choose to believe it. Yep. Yeah. Fuck it.
Now, Peter, you thought that one was mysterious, but if that one happened, that one might not have happened. This one actually did.
Okay.
We're going to talk about the Flannan Isle Lighthouse Keeper's disappearance. Mm-hmm. You ever heard of this one?
I have not.
This is one of the strangest maritime mysteries, Peter, because this happened in the remote Outer Hebrides Islands of Scotland.
Mm-hmm.
The Flannan Islands are a small, rugged archipelago named after St. Flannan, who was a 6th century Irish bishop.
Okay.
But the main focus of this mystery is the lighthouse on Eileen Moor, which is the largest island of the group, which was the site of a mysterious disappearance in December 1900.
Okay.
So this lighthouse was constantly manned by 3 keepers. At the time, they were James Ducat, Thomas Marshall, and Donald MacArthur.
Okay.
And their job was to maintain the light that guided ships safely through the treacherous islands. Because
mm-hmm.
it was a bad place, Peter.
Right. Rocks and...
Yep. Rocks. However, and Peter, stuff. On December 15th, 1900, that's coming up. That's not even that far from now, Peter. A passing ship noted that the lighthouse was not lit.
Uh-oh.
So, which is highly unusual and dangerous.
Yeah.
But due to the bad weather, it was over a week before a relief ship could land on the island. Could
get there.
And what do you think they found when they landed there, Peter?
Nothing.
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 The lighthouse was deserted. The door was open. The keepers were nowhere to be found on the island. And the disappearance was shrouded in mystery, Peter.
Mm-hmm.
The last entry in the lighthouse's logbook added to the intrigue.
Okay.
For the entry, particularly the very last one, described severe winds, the likes of which the experienced keepers had never seen before, and mentioned that MacArthur had been sobbing and crying like a child.
Oh my god.
Which seemed out of character for the very manly adult that MacArthur was.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not something he would have ever done.
Right. Not normal behavior.
Yep. These are lighthouse men. They're tough.
Yeah.
So... Peter, again, nothing to go on, which led to rampant theorizing.
Severe speculation.
Suggested that the men were swept away by a massive wave while securing equipment outside. This theory is supported by the damage found to a dock at 110 feet above to a box. I'm sorry. This theory is supported by the damage found to a box at 110 feet above sea level and the disappearance of a life buoy. So what might have happened, Peter, is, well, we know for a fact that before this happened, they were fined for improperly storing things during storms. So, well, you can imagine a storm came. They realized they didn't tie things up right. They didn't want to get fined again. One of them went down to secure it, got in trouble, right?
Yep.
The other one left to go help him with the life buoy. He got in trouble.
And the third
Then the third guy went to go help, and they all died.
Died.
Yep.
That seems very plausible.
It seems very plausible, Peter. But is that the most interesting thing that could have happened to them?
The most fun option?
No. I don't want to say fun with about what I'm about to say, Peter.
Mm.
But another theory posits that one of the keepers went mad with jealousy and murdered the other two before throwing himself into the sea.
See, I was just about to say, we did an episode on The Shining recently.
We did.
Which, I understand that this is not the case.
It's terrible.
But, if from the movie perspective, it sure seems like the guy just goes nuts from being basically by himself.
Yep.
You know? So?
This theory kind of...
just become an axe murderer.
The fact that maybe the three were in some sort of torrid three-way... a love triangle.
Oh, how sensual. Yeah. Just imagine the three lighthouse keepers.
Lighthouse keepers with their beards
all over
and their
each other.
Whale sperm.
Just the whale blubber lanterns. I get all hot and bothered thinking about it.
Peter, there's no credible evidence that this is what happened.
Come here, Jimothy.
Jimothy?
Come sit on my lap.
Well, Peter, in more recent times, with our, you know, improved scientific knowledge, some suggest that something called a rogue wave might have swept them away. Mm-hmm. You know what a rogue wave is, Peter?
I'm guessing that it's a wave that's bigger than all the other ones.
And it comes completely unexpected. No lead up, nothing, just bam.
Boom.
One and done.
Yeah.
Yep. People didn't think that people thought they were myths for a long time, but they weren't.
They're real. They're very real.
But how many times have I already said this episode, Peter? The truth behind the Flannan Isles lighthouse keeper disappearances?
Nobody knows.
It remains unsolved, and we'll never know. I mean, are they just going to show up somewhere?
Yeah, someday... we're going to find their journals from when they moved to London to start their life as a trio a thruple of, you know, whatever. They bought a bar.
Otters and bears. Yeah. Oh, boy, Peter. Well, we've got one more for our episode today, Peter.
Excellent.
This is by far the most modern one.
Okay.
And possibly one of the most modern things we've talked about in our podcast. Should we take a wild guess what this is, Peter?
Did you kidnap my family and this is how I find out?
No, Peter. We're going to talk about the disappearance of Malaysia Airlines Flight 370. MH370.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Really, Peter?
Yeah.
Where did the plane go? Oh, my God, Peter.
I don't know. Where did the plane go, Stevie?
Peter, the Boeing 777 took off from Kuala Lumpur International Airport on March 8th, 2014.
Okay.
Bound for Beijing Capital International Airport with 239 people on board. Peter, again, this is 2014.
Yeah.
This was 9 years ago.
Not
only
that long ago.
Only 9 years ago. Less than an hour into the flight, MH370 vanished from radar screens. Just gone.
Bloop.
Yeah, Peter. And this triggered a multinational search effort. And this was all anyone talked about on the news for a long time. I can't believe I missed this beater.
I completely missed it.
What were you doing in 2014?
2014, I was in college.
Ugh.
Actually, I turned 21 in 2014, so.
You were, the old boy.
I think we might have figured it out.
So, Peter, MH370's last known location was over the South China Sea. But investigations revealed later that it deviated unexpectedly and significantly from its planned route.
Ooh.
The aircraft turned sharply westward, crossing the Malay Peninsula, and then turned again, flying southward over the Indian Ocean.
Interesting.
We don't know why. We don't know what brought upon this flight path change. But it went in a weird direction.
Yeah, because that sounds like the opposite of the direction that it's supposed to be going.
Several companies, including Malaysia, China, Australia, the U.S., participated in the search. And it became the largest and most expensive in aviation history.
Hmm?
The initial search focused on the South China Sea, and then shifted to the Indian Ocean when new knowledge was maybe found.
Right.
Following the signals believed to be from the aircraft's black box. But, Peter, all of our advanced technology, and this is less than 10 years ago, no definitive trace of the aircraft was found during the search.
Jeez, nothing. No, I mean,
a plane just disappeared.
Just vanished.
Less than 10 years ago.
I guess. Like, that's the thing about the ocean, right? Is it's big. Huge and completely unexplored. It's like the submarine that imploded.
So the sub imploded.
Yeah, it imploded and vaporized everybody. Like, we know what happened because we just, you know, we...
Science.
But we have no idea where. But there's nothing.
Did they find the sub?
No, because... At the depth that it was at, as soon as the pressure was compromised, I think it's like the size of like a marble now.
Whoa,
like everything inside crushed down to like
that's something,
a few square inches or something crazy like that. So it's like, yeah, if it goes down in the middle of the ocean, especially if it's super deep, like nothing goes down there.
The most popular theory, Peter, is mechanical failure.
Yeah.
Or a catastrophic event that led to the crash.
Hit a goose.
But, Peter, well, yeah, the goose got revenge for Sully,
yeah.
But others, of course, suggested more sinister scenarios, such as hijacking or a deliberate action by the pilot or crew. Because, Peter, there was no distress signal ever. Mm-hmm. It just...
Gone. That is the weird thing, I guess.
Yep. What was interesting, too, Peter, is that there might have been a number of scientists aboard this airplane.
Ooh.
That all just died. This disappeared. So there's a certain segment of the population who was latched onto this and said that the plane was brought down because these people were on board. Right.
They knew too much.
Yep. Well, Peter, the most significant breakthrough in the search came in 2018. So, you know, a long time after the plane.
Yeah,
after
4 years later.
When on Reunion Island, a large number of aircraft debris washed up onto the beach. And it might have been confirmed to be from MH370.
Okay.
But we still have no clue why it happened,
right?
Where it happened, and why they ended up thousands of miles off course.
Huh.
But apparently what they could tell from the debris, Peter, is that the aircraft did not undergo a controlled descent, indicating that it might have ran out of fuel. And crashed at high speed. Yep. That's weird, isn't it?
It sure seems like something that isn't supposed to happen in 2014.
Like, you think if they... This wasn't the pilot just bring it into the ocean either. This, I guess, it just...
Just fell out of the sky.
Who knows? This could be UFOs, though.
Could be UFOs.
Well, we're like I said, we're going to come back to future episodes where we talk about more singular disappearances. You've got your famous ones like Amelia Earhart. Everyone's talked about that. Jimmy Hoffa. A lot of people know about that.
Didn't they find Amelia Earhart?
Well, depends on who you believe.
Oh, either. Okay.
Yeah, it's one of those.
If it's always one of those.
If it's true things. Yeah, we'll talk about more modern things like Amy Bradley, who just disappeared from a cruise ship. A lot of cruise ship stuff happens, Peter. I might just do a whole episode about cruise ship crimes.
I mean, yeah, cruise ships are nuts.
Yeah. There was the billionaire who might have been cannibalized by a bunch of people in South America.
Oh, that's fun.
That's the Rockefeller that I mentioned before. But... You know, we've covered other mysterious disappearances. Was it Brandon Schaefer,
mm-hmm.
one from Minnesota,
mm-hmm.
that just disappeared one day?
Yep.
But we'll come back and do deeper dives on some of this stuff. But I think that'll be it for our mass disappearances. I'm sure there's other mass disappearances we didn't cover too, Peter.
I assume so. But, I don't know of any of them.
You don't know much of anything, Peter.
No, I don't.
What do you think of these from today, Peter?
I think, you know, probably the majority of them are bullshit.
Do you think any of them actually happened?
I'm sure that some of them did.
Okay. Like which ones?
The obviously the aircraft.
Yep.
Did disappear.
Are you saying that because it's the last one and it's the only one you remember, Peter?
No. I really like the one about the Inuit village in Canada.
Yes, yep. I really like that story.
That one's
been around for
me.
A while.
Yeah.
I believe it happened.
Yeah. I was fully on board until we found out that there was actually zero evidence that this had ever happened. And it's like, I'm going to choose to still be on board. There might be villages
that, you know, Inuit villages that move from time to time and just aren't recorded.
I'm sure.
But I like the Roman stuff. I thought the Roman army, the Legion army, maybe being in China was super interesting.
That one's really interesting. Yeah. Cause that one too was so long ago that it's just impossible.
We'll never know.
We're very unlikely to ever find any out for sure.
Maybe someday someone will be like, you know, excavating their basement for a new project and come across a hidden cache of scrolls.
Yeah.
That happens sometimes.
It happens.
Yep. But we'll never know.
No.
But that's it. That'll be it for us today. We're glad that you listened to us. We have a Discord in the episode link below.
Right.
If you want to mock me for any of my, you know, pronunciations or have any comments to say, you can email that to us at contacttheknownunknowns@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
We have a Patreon. You can give us a couple of dollars to give us to gain access to our episode archives.
Yes, you can.
We have lots of those growing, you know, every month about.
Oh, roughly.
We have, what else do we got, Peter?
We have a subreddit.
We have a subreddit, r/theknownunknowns. I've been a little sick this week, so I hope it was legible for everybody. But, Peter, do you have anything you want to add at the end of our episode here? Anything you want to plug?
This will
come out sometime in November, I think.
Yeah, just check out my band. If you're in the Lombard area on New Year's Eve, December 30th, come on out to the Brower House. We're playing a gig there. My outlaw country band, The Rangers.
Fantastic.
We'll also be in Lisle, Illinois in January.
Ooh, Lisle, Illinois.
Lisle, Lisle, at The Retreat on January 15th, something like that.
Well, we hope to see you there, everybody. You can listen to The Rangers on Spotify, where you can listen to us there, too.
Yeah. Shamelessly plug all of the projects.
Yep. Tell your friends about this podcast.
Yes. Tell us about all of your friends.
We'd love to hear about your friends. That would be nice.
I would like some.
Yeah, me too. Me too, Peter. Well, I think that's it. But remember that even if none of these people are ever found, that you must believe in the unknown.
Gotta do it. It's just more fun.
It's just more fun to believe just that an entire
thinking about just you know, three brawny lighthouse keepers sitting together.
Living in Finn in London.
Oh. Gets me all hot and bothered.
Bothered.
Jimothy.
They probably drowned to death.
Probably. Yeah. I'm just making fun of a bunch of dead people. I do that sometimes.
Well, we'll see you next week, everybody. And have a great night.
Make good choices.
Enjoy the next episode.
Yes, do that. Bye now,
everybody. 6, 5.